you got cooking? How about cooking something up with me?
Let's stir it up, boys.
Welcome to the Outdoor Cooking Show, a weekly excursion into the fine art of preparing the world's most popular recipes under an open sky and an open flame. This edition of the Outdoor Cooking Show is brought to you by Boyd's One Stop, located at the Texas City Dyke. Now, here's your host, the old grill sergeant, Randy Hayes.
Could someone please tell Roger Craiger that the World Championship Barbecue Contest is officially over? And that he can leave the NRG parking lot now. I got to know Roger a little bit when I was Irv Harrigan on the Hudson and Harrigan show back a few years ago. Well, okay, it was more than just a few years ago. But I can tell you this about Roger Craiger. Roger does not shy away from a party, you know what I mean? So it really wouldn't surprise me at all to find out that he really was still roaming around the grounds out there at NRG Stadium, just looking for some place to plug in his guitar and sing a few tunes and drink a few more beers. Roger is a one-of-a-kind artist. He's an all-round nice guy. He's one of my favorites among Texas country artists. So I say all this with all due respect. And with my tongue planted firmly in my cheek. It was a great year for the barbecue contest. And I'll tell you what I'm anxious to hear. I want to know how those two cooking teams we interviewed on last week's show fared in the final judging. If you missed those interviews, you can always listen to all our shows by clicking on the podcasts section on our website. It's very simple. It's theoutdoorcookingshow.com. And you'll find us talking to, well, for one, the overall grand champion of last year's cook-off, the Bulldog Mountain Cooking Crew. And we also talked to the Cypress Boys barbecue cooking team. The Cypress Boys are good friends with our buddies at Belleville Meat Market, Jared and Marcus Poffenberger. And yes, to answer your question, because I know you asked the question, Belleville Meat Market is where the Cypress Boys get all that good meat they cook. But if there's one thing I learned from doing last week's show, it's this. Getting cooking secrets from professional chefs is a whole lot easier than trying to get cooking secrets from competitive cookers. And when I stop and think about it, that's only rightfully so, I guess. I mean, chefs, professional chefs, don't have to impress judges to win customers, just customers. But these competitive cookers, man, these guys are always looking for an edge to win these contests. So I guess it's just natural that the cooking teams are going to be a little more protective of secret ingredients and special cooking techniques they employ. As Mike Wells of the Bulldog Mountain Cooking Crew said to me, I can help you with that. See, I had asked Mike to get really specific about the exact blend of the rubs and spices they use on their brisket, and the ribs and the chicken, and unsurprisingly, Mike respectfully declined. Phil Zadunkowitz of Cypress Boys just flat out yelled at me, I can't tell you that. I laughed and said, well, I had to try. You know, there are probably as many different dry rubs and marinades as there are cooks at the World's Championship Barbecue Contest every year. And who knows, maybe they even vary from year to year. I don't know. Anything's possible. On the other hand, Mike Wells told me that the Bulldog Mountain cooking crew didn't do anything at all differently last year. And after all, that's when they won the overall grand champion trophy, so maybe not. Yeah, he claimed they just had a good day. Kind of like Tom Brady at the Super Bowl. You know, sometimes things just sort of fall into place. And that seems to be the case in cooking just as much as it is in football. But I learned a lot of other good stuff during last week's show, too. Like, for one, I should leave the singing to my old friends Dierks Bentley and Brad Paisley. Both of them are going to be at the rodeo this year. And both of them appeared pretty regularly on the Hudson and Harrigan show, so I got to know them fairly well. Now, I'm not blood brothers with either one of them, but I know them well enough to tell you this. Neither one of them would try to host the outdoor cooking show on the radio. So I guess what's good for the singer is good for the man in the box, too. So I think I'll just try to stick to talking about outdoor cooking. Thank you very much. As a matter of fact, I learned a lot about that. Not singing. Outdoor cooking. Like cooking chicken closer to the fire rather than low and slow like you do for ribs or brisket. I didn't know that, did you? And speaking of brisket, I learned a new term last week, smoke ring. Yeah, I hear some of you. You're already thinking to yourself, boy, this guy is a total dunce. Everybody knows about a smoke ring on a brisket. Well, first off, it doesn't bother me one little bit that you think I'm a dunce. I've made no bones about the fact that I am not an expert outdoor cook. I actually think that makes me the perfect host for the outdoor cooking show because I'm not at all ashamed to ask the stupid questions none of you want to admit you don't know the answer to. And on top of that, I would beg to differ with your opinion in the first place. I had more than one listener remark to me how much they appreciated me asking about the smoke ring on a brisket because they hadn't heard of it either. So there. As a matter of fact, the only guy who was upset with me was the guy who wanted me to ask for more details on how you can get a good smoke ring on a brisket. And I probably should have done that. But, you know, I got so thoroughly confused when Mike Wells started talking about clean smoke versus dirty smoke, which are two more new terms I learned last week. I apparently just didn't learn enough. From what my addled brain could gather and recall, clean smoke has a little bit of flame in it, and dirty smoke does not. Now, I'm not sure how you acquire clean smoke with a little flame in it, or dirty smoke without any flame in it, and I guess that's why I'm so confused. But in any case, dirty smoke is supposed to make the meat bitter. So according to Mike, you should try to avoid dirty smoke. That's as technical as I can get on that subject, so sorry, whatever. Look, it was a fun show, and at least I learned a lot, whether you did or not. With all that being said, the barbecue cook-off, I know it's supposed to be contest, but that's what I've always called it. That's what I always will call it. So the barbecue cook-off is over. And Rodeo Houston begins in, 48 hours or so? So it's time for us to turn our attention to other food preparation matters. You know, we touched on the subject of unique techniques with Ryan Braden. He's the executive chef at Brenner's on the Bayou. That was a couple of weeks ago. That was the same show that featured trail riders and chuck wagon cooking. Remember that? And Ryan talked about the enhancements that they offer on all their steaks at Brenner's on the Bayou. And he also alluded to some other unique techniques that chefs share with one another at conventions or symposiums, whatever they call them. Like sous vide? Or was it sous vain? I can never get that straight. But anyway, we thought unique techniques might make a good topic for an entire show. Today's show, as a matter of fact. So what we're going to do is this. We're going to enlist the help and, obviously, the expertise of an old friend we've had on the show before. You'll recognize his name, and especially his voice. And then we're going to have on a group of cooking enthusiasts who specialize in one particular outdoor cooker that I'll admit I have never used before, so I know I'm going to learn something new there. And then we're going to have one of the most respected chefs in the Emeril Lagasse organization. Ha ha! Pretty impressive, right? I mean, this guy is a highly acclaimed chef. Well, he wouldn't be one of Emerald's top guns if he wasn't, now would he be? And he's going to talk about something else that's totally new to me, the Robata style of Japanese cooking. Come on, admit it. You haven't heard of that either, have you? I know I'm going to learn something new. And who knows? Maybe you will too.
If your barbecue has gone up in smoke and your cooking reputation is at stake, stick around. The Old Grill Sergeant will be right back with more ideas and advice to make your next cookout sizzle.
Boyd's One Stop. The name says it all. If you like seafood, you'll love Boyd's, conveniently located at the base of the Texas City Dyke. Boyd's One Stop has bait, tackle, fresh seafood, and even a restaurant, all at 227 Dyke Road. If you fish Galveston Bay, Boyd's is the one and only stop for everything you need. There's a reason why they're called the live shrimp capital of Texas. But they've also got lots of finger mullet, croaker, plus fresh dead shrimp, shad, and squid. Plus, Boyd's has tackle galore, ice and ice chests, and cold drinks and snacks. Just need fresh fish for a family seafood feast? The freshest seafood, like table shrimp, live blue crab, and crawfish when in season, is in stock and ready for you at Boyd's. And if you're hungry right now, check out Boyd's Cajun Grill Express right next door, with a wide variety of breakfast, lunch, and dinner items like crawfish, oyster po'boys, and fried seafood platters. Boyd's One Stop, the name says it all, 227 Dyke Road at the base of the Texas City Dyke. Randy Hames here, and my salsa has to pass the chip test. That's why I personally recommend Jake's Atomic Salsa. Jake Johnson isn't your typical middle school student. He's picky about salsa, too, so he developed his own. And it was so good, his friends asked him to sell them some, and Jake's Atomic Salsa was born. Jake's Atomic Salsa has a hearty blend of tomatoes, plus roasted poblano, serrano, jalapeno, and habanero peppers. It also includes lots of fresh lemon and lime juice to add bright notes, with no large chunks of onion or cilantro. Jake's Atomic Salsa comes in four different flavors, from mild to out-of-this-world spicy, and goes great with eggs, enchiladas, meatloaf, Bloody Marys, or just pour it over cream cheese. It's the best salsa you've ever tasted, and all the profits go to pay for Jake's college education. Check out Jake's Atomic Salsa on Facebook, and go to jakesatomicsalsa.com to order a few jars, or try the variety pack with all four flavors. I know, you'll agree with me, Jake's Atomic Salsa is the bomb. Creekstone Outdoor Living. The name says it all. If you like being outdoors in your own space, you'll love Creekstone Outdoor Living. Located on the north side of Houston, Creekstone Outdoor Living has grills, lighting, appliances, pizza ovens, furniture, and even a design studio at 3555 Rayford Road, Suite 60 in Spring, Texas, just off the Grand Parkway. If you love your backyard, Creekstone Outdoor Living has everything you need. There's a reason why they're called the Backyard Paradise Specialists. They also carry the quality brands you love, like Yeti, RCX, Lynx, Fire Magic, Weber, American Muscle Grill, The Big Green Egg, Coppersmith, and many more. Just looking for some storage for the game or fishing? No problem. The Yeti Tundra Coolers are perfect for the job and come in sizes weighing up to 90 pounds. And if you're looking for some great design ideas, inspiration, or even some of their work, visit their website at www.creekstoneoutdoors.com. Creekstone Outdoor Living, the Backyard Paradise Specialists, 3555 Rayford Road, Suite 60, Spring, Texas, 713-389-5936. Hi, it's Randy Hames again. Everybody needs a new video, or a new website, or help in managing their social media. And my company, Edgewater Multimedia, can help. We help small businesses navigate the intimidating world of cyber advertising. You've got a business to run, and you don't have time to build and maintain your own website all by yourself, and you certainly don't have time to generate content for it. And when's the last time you had an extra hour or two to post something on your company's Facebook or Twitter accounts? Huh, like never, right? Well, at Edgewater Multimedia, that's what we do. We have a web designer on staff who has built some of the most eye-catching websites you've ever seen. And Edgewater features a photographer and videographer who can capture beautiful images to enhance the content on your website, not to mention social media. We can even manage your Facebook and Twitter accounts for you. Call us today, 832-500-4272, or see our website, edgewatermultimedia.com.
Life is simple. Eat, sleep, grill. The Outdoor Cooking Show is brought to you by Froberg's Farm on Highway 6 in Alvin. Now, here's the grill father, Randy Hames.
Let's make welcome now the president of the Lone Star Dutch Oven Society. Her name is Robin Kloot. Hi, Robin.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you here. So what do you guys do over at the Lone Star Dutch Oven Society anyway?
We promote the education and preservation of the lore of Dutch oven cooking. Dutch oven cooking has a very long history. We traveled across the plains with the wagon trains, on the cattle drives. We came over with the pioneers. It's just a wonderful piece of our nation's heritage.
Well, that brief historical overview of the Dutch oven doesn't really include some of the stuff that I looked up on it, because to be honest with you, I didn't know a whole lot about Dutch ovens before this interview. I discovered that people all over Europe use Dutch ovens, but the Dutch actually introduced the system for producing them by using dry sand, which made them a smoother surface, and they got better results, and that's why we called them Dutch ovens. Did you know that?
Yes, I did, and that's very correct. And they're actually the ones that brought them to the United States. It's the casting method, which is still the same type of method that's used today to make these, is what gives you that smooth surface that over time, with seasoning, will allow your food to not stick.
Now, you're talking about the old cast iron Dutch ovens that are much like the iron skillets that we see in which we make cornbread and things like that, right?
Absolutely. What we use are called camp Dutch ovens, and they are not flat bottom. They have three legs that raise the oven above the coals that you put under the oven, and they also have a raised lip on the lid that allows you to put coals on top of the oven. So it gives you a convection heat kind of movement through your food, which is what allows you to cook so very evenly, just like you would do in a home oven.
Now, let me make this perfectly clear. I looked this up. I didn't know this. The three legs on the bottom and the flat surface with the flanged lip on the top were invented by Paul Revere.
That is correct. That's what the lore is that Paul Revere was the one to create those improvements to the flat bottom Dutch oven.
So do you think that's where Revere cookware came from?
I kind of doubt it. But it's a good thought.
You know, we also found out that people considered their Dutch ovens so valuable that they often included them in family wills. George Washington's mother considered her Dutch ovens so valuable that she actually specified in her will in 1788 that one half of her, what she called her iron kitchen furniture, should go to her grandson, and the other half should go to her granddaughter. Isn't that interesting?
That's fascinating, and I didn't know that. Thank you for sharing that with me.
So explain to us exactly how a Dutch oven works.
Dutch oven cooking, as we do it, is cooked on a raised cooking surface. Now, this can be, and is most commonly, a cast iron or steel table. It gets it raised up maybe thigh high. Therefore, we can cook anywhere. We don't have to have a surface that we have to worry about catching on fire. We cook with charcoal briquettes instead of wood. Now, there are most of the chuck wagon cooks you will find cook with wood, charcoal made from chunks of wood. They're not uniform in size.
Uh-huh.
So those are best when you're cooking something that you don't need a really precise temperature on. But when you cook with briquettes, you can get an extremely accurate temperature.
And we've been told by several different people, if you know how to use a Dutch oven properly, you can literally bake anything in a Dutch oven that can be cooked in a conventional electric or gas oven, just like the ones we find in our modern homes. Do you agree with that?
I absolutely agree with that. In fact, I will even expand on that a little, in that we can also make ice cream in our Dutch ovens because they conduct cold as well as heat.
Now, explain that, please.
You basically put a pot in a pot. That just like with your homemade ice cream makers, you fill the outer pot with ice and salt and the inner pot with your ice cream mixture, and it gets cold enough that it will actually freeze for ice cream.
So how did you get into Dutch oven cooking in the first place, Robin?
We got into Dutch oven cooking because the National Dutch Oven Gathering was held in Canton, Texas in 2012. The hosts were friends of ours through another affiliation, and they needed people to come who were not Dutch oven cooks and had time to run some of the other events that were going on, you know, general hosting duties. And so they asked us if we would be willing to do that. And by the end of the weekend, we went home with a cast iron pot. So, and that's all she wrote. It went on from there. And we've been cooking now 5 years. And we cook with two different local groups here in the Fort Worth area, one in Grand Prairie and another in Cleburne. And with others when we can visit their chapters around the state.
We've also heard that you and Dennis are especially renowned for your championship-winning cheesecake. Tell us exactly how you make cheesecake in a Dutch oven.
Well, there's a lot of steps involved, but it's really not that difficult. You basically do the crust, which is a graham cracker type crust, or you can use crushed cookies or whatever you like. Lots of butter, and you pack it in there. And then bake it off for 10 minutes, and then make the cheesecake mixture, put it in the pot, in the crust, bake that off. You don't need a water bath or anything like you might need at home, because the cast iron cooks so evenly, you don't have the occasional hot spots that you might get in your home oven that might cause your cast iron, your cheesecake to crack across the top. And then you, once it's cooled, you put it in ice in the Dutch oven, the entire oven with the lid on in ice after cooling it down gradually. You pack it in ice for 3-4 hours, pull it out, top it as you want, pull it out of the Dutch oven, and there you go.
But there are so many uses for the Dutch oven. We would be remiss if we didn't talk about stews and casseroles and other dishes. What are some of your favorites?
I like bread. And bread is a challenge for me personally, not only in a Dutch oven, but at home. Yeast is not my friend. And so I really find that a challenge to create beautiful breads and rolls in a Dutch oven. I think most beginning cooks start with cobblers because those are very easy and very forgiving. Mm-hmm. And there's so many of them out there that you can try and have a real variety.
Well, we love meat around here.
Hunks of meat, like a pork loin or a roast or a pork butt, all of those do beautifully in a Dutch oven given enough time. This is not microwave cooking. This is slow and low, and the payoff is well worth it. We do barbecue ribs in ours. We've done a brisket, but boy, does that take a while. A lot of charcoal for that one.
And Nicole also graciously invited us to your 2017 Big Dog in late March up in Conroe. Fill us in on the details of that event, would you, Robin?
I will. The Big Dog is one of our three statewide events that we hold every year. The other two being our board meeting and our membership meeting, that all of our Lone Star Dutch Oven Society members are welcome to attend at no charge. Our membership fee is $20 a year, and that is for the entire family. And it basically covers your newsletter, a window clean, and gets you access to parts of the website that are a members-only section of the website.
This has been Robin Klutsch. She's the president of the Lone Star Dutch Oven Society. Tell us how people can find out more about your organization, website, social media presence, things like that.
We do have a very active Facebook group, as do all of our chapters, and it is called...
Let's get it right.
Let me get the exact name here.
Take your time. No hurry.
Lone Star Dutch Oven...
Society?
Society is how it's listed on Facebook. That's where most of our ongoing current activities are. We have a website that is being redone currently, but it's still usable for lsdos.com. And we welcome any and all interest to please contact us, contact your local chapter. The website and the Facebook page will give you access to where those chapters are. We'd love to have you come out and cook. You're always welcome.
Thanks for your time, Robin, and I hope I'll be able to visit with you at the Big Dog in Conroe later this month.
We hope to see you there. That's a great time, and you'll learn a lot.
Stay patient. Dinner will be ready right after the smoke alarm goes off. The Outdoor Cooking Show will be back with more smoking hot tips for you and your old flame after this short break.
Nothing beats farm fresh produce. Roadside stands are great, but not always well stocked. But Froberg's Farm on Highway 6 in Alvin always has produce fresh from the field. You can't get produce this fresh in stores. Froberg's has a spacious covered market, or you can pick your own produce if you prefer. This time of year is great for cabbage, cauliflower, collard and mustard greens, turnips, radishes, rutabagas, kumquats, even Brussels sprouts, and a whole lot more. Fruits, vegetables, jams, jellies, pickles, and a huge selection of dried beans and peas. And Froberg's Farm is famous for its pies, both traditional homemade or fried pies, with over 20 different flavors. Order in advance, and Froberg's can have as many as you need ready for pickup. And be sure you visit Greek Smokehouse right next door while you're there. Froberg's Farm, only 8 miles south of 288 and 2.5 miles from Business 35 on Highway 6 in Alvin. Open 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Froberg's Farm, farm fresh produce since 1936. Headed home from the field with an ice cooler full of wild game? Drop it off at Belleville Meat Market's new processing facility and see how they've taken wild game processing and made it a front door experience. Belleville Meat Market hasn't changed the quality of their products or services for 35 years, so they're not changing because they're growing because they haven't changed. Take your wild game to Belleville Meat Market's new wild game processing plant and take the worry out of processing it into any high-quality cut of meat you want. And if you can't make it to Belleville Meat Market, be sure you check out their newly redesigned website and online store, BellevilleMeatMarket.com, offering a wide variety of their most popular pecan smoke products. But if you've got wild game, Belleville Meat Market's new processing facility will handle everything for you, and it's right next door to their landmark location. Belleville Meat Market and Wild Game Processing Center, conveniently located just 14 miles north of I-10 and 14 miles south of Highway 290 on Highway 36 in Belleville. Randy Hames is my name, but many of you know me better as half of one of Houston's most iconic early morning comedy radio shows, The Hudson and Harrigan Show. Now, I'm no longer Irv Harrigan, but I've written a book about the show that I think you'll love. Fred Olson and I hosted the show for almost 30 years, and we enjoyed unbelievable rating success and won numerous awards. But the best part was, we were just having fun. Listeners told us they laughed all the way to work every day, too, with characters such as Jim Bob Jumpback, The Story Guy, and Tyrone, plus dozens of others. Houston's morning show recreates some of those hilarious on-air moments and gives you a unique behind-the-scenes peek at even funnier off-air events. Plus, I've carefully chronicled an accurate history of the show and how it evolved. Houston's Morning Show. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or as an audiobook on iTunes. Get your copy of Houston's Morning Show today and join the fun. Randy Hames here, and my salsa has to pass the chip test. That's why I personally recommend Jake's Atomic Salsa. Jake Johnson isn't your typical middle school student. He's picky about salsa, too, so he developed his own. And it was so good, his friends asked him to sell them some, and Jake's Atomic Salsa was born. Jake's Atomic Salsa has a hearty blend of tomatoes, plus roasted poblano, serrano, jalapeno, and habanero peppers. It also includes lots of fresh lemon and lime juice to add bright notes, with no large chunks of onion or cilantro. Jake's Atomic Salsa comes in four different flavors, from mild to out-of-this-world spicy, and goes great with eggs, enchiladas, meatloaf, Bloody Marys, or just pour it over cream cheese. It's the best salsa you've ever tasted, and all the profits go to pay for Jake's college education. Check out Jake's Atomic Salsa on Facebook, and go to jakesatomicsalsa.com to order a few jars, or try the variety pack with all four flavors. I know, you'll agree with me, Jake's Atomic Salsa is the bomb.
Stand back. We've got our grill on. The Outdoor Cooking Show is brought to you by Boyd's One Stop at the Texas City Dyke. Now, here's your host, the daddy-o of the patio, Randy Hames.
We are always happy to welcome back our old friend from the George Ranch Historical Park, Nick Castleberg. How's it going, buddy?
Pretty good, my friend. How you doing?
Doing well. So what's going on at the George Ranch this time of year, early March?
Well, of course, we got spring break just around the corner, and we'll be serving a lunch every single day of spring break this year from 12:30 to 1:30, as well as a lot of other exciting things to see and do throughout the park itself.
Do you find that more people want to hear about early Texas at this time of year, you know, during rodeo and what we affectionately refer to as the high holy days of Texas history?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. You know, you got Black History Month coming out of February, where a lot of our cowboys were African Americans, so we lead right into that, and then you get into March and April, very important dates in Texas history. So, yeah, we seem to get a lot more curiosity-seeking folks coming out, not necessarily folks coming specifically just to learn the history, but just to completely immerse themselves in, you know, what they might have seen at the rodeo. You mentioned the rodeo. Of course, that's a big draw here in Houston as well.
The last time we talked to Nick, it was about trail rides and chuck wagon cooking. And to be honest, we didn't have time to cover everything I wanted to ask you about. So let's start with Dutch ovens. That's a pretty unique technique, and that's the subject of today's show. Chuck wagon cooks often baked biscuits and other bread products in Dutch ovens. And I must admit, I'm not particularly familiar with the techniques used to accomplish that. So describe that process for us.
Okay, well, Dutch oven is basically a closed pot with a heavy metal lid. And anything that you can bake in a modern oven, we can duplicate over an open fire out on the prairie somewhere. You put your product down inside. And, of course, they come in various sizes and shapes. You've got deeps, you've got shallows. If you're looking at buying one, they'll have a number stamped on the top, like a 10 or a 12 or a 14 or an 18. That's just the diameter of the oven. So if someone tells you to go get a 12 shallow, they mean a 12-inch diameter shallow Dutch oven. But you just take whatever it is you're going to bake or roast or broil or, I mean, you can do anything in them. But for baking purposes, put your biscuits down inside, say. Place the lid on the top. Cover the lid with hot coals. And here's where the similarities with our modern ovens end. You know, you can't take a Dutch oven and set the dial to 375 and set the timer for 20 minutes and go sit down under a shade tree with a glass of tea, because you're going to burn it every time. You know, so it's very attention to detail oriented. You're relatively often pulling the lid, checking the product. I've come up with a technique which we offer at our teaching classes here. Where we line the lid up with the wire handle. That way, when you take the lid off, you put it back on, you've got a reference point. Mm-hmm. So if the biscuits were brown on one side and not the other, you just turn the lid 180 degrees, move the hot spot around. Once your biscuits get nice and brown on the top, what we do is we take the coals, dump them off the lid onto the ground, and then we'll take that same Dutch oven and set it on top of those coals. There's a reason for that. Fresh coals right out of the fire, of course, a lot of thermal energy. Unlike the top of the biscuits, where there's a good 2-inch gap from the bread to the top of the oven, so physics would tell us it's going to take a little longer to get hot. When you put coals underneath that baby, those biscuits are going to start to brown in a minute or two. So we use the coals that have already shed off a lot of their heat. It's a little bit safer, a lot less chance of burning the bottom of your biscuits.
Right.
We'll let them go usually 3 to 5 minutes. And just like you would rotate the lid, moving the hot spots, of course, on the bottom you can't really see where the hot spot underneath the biscuit is. It's one of these rare occasions where it's safe to assume that there is a hot spot, and so we'll just rotate that oven about every 45 seconds, a quarter turn.
Hmm.
Pull it after 3 to 5 minutes, let it sit for a couple of minutes. It will continue to carry over cook, because that metal is going to reach a peak heat before it starts to cool again. And we also find when you let your oven rest for a few minutes, cast iron is porous by design, and when it gets hot, those little pores, they expand. And so your bread, your biscuits, say, will actually have little feet down inside all those little pores. So if you try and get them out when it's really hot and expanded, you're going to have to chisel them out. But if you let it cool for a few minutes, give it a gentle shake as those metal pores close back up, it just completely releases. It's the ultimate nonstick cookware. And they dump right out.
Yeah, obviously, from the way you describe this, using a Dutch oven is child's play for you. But for most of us, it's what we call a unique technique. And that's the subject of today's show. After we had finished up our interview the last time you were on the show, you mentioned a couple of those unique techniques off the air. And that's when I suggested we have you back to talk about those. Why don't you just explain to us what you were telling me about?
Well, we had somehow got on the subject of bear meat, and of course, being stationed up in Washington State, I did have a chance to sample the bear meat, and it is tough as old leather, I tell you. But one of the techniques that we've used here for a long time, and I've known about since my time in Malaysia, was taking papaya, just fresh, raw papaya, green, yellow, doesn't matter, and cut up a couple of chunks of papaya and put it in a Ziploc bag with your meat. And I usually let it go 2 or 3 hours, about every 30 minutes, just kind of massage it around a little bit. take the meat out, rinse it off, and then season it up and cook it the way you would, however you want to cook it, if you're going to grill it or saute it or whatever. The enzymes in the papaya, called papain, are absolutely miracle workers on the collagen that holds the muscle cells together. And of course, as we cook our meat, that collagen slowly, as we get the right temperature, just turns to gelatin. So the enzymes in papaya actually kind of kickstart that process. So we use it on alligator meat, which can be really tough. Bear. It's good on just about any red meat. Now, for poultry, what we like to use is either buttermilk. You know, everybody knows you soak chicken in buttermilk overnight, a little hot sauce mixed in with it before you bread it up and fry it the next day. We serve gizzards here. Gizzards, if you don't soak them overnight in buttermilk, can give your dental work a workout trying to get them down. I mean, they taste good. They're chewy as all get out. So yogurt works and buttermilk works really well for marinating poultry and kind of getting a kick start on getting that tender product that you want.
Now, you mentioned alligator a moment ago. Nick, talk about that. That's kind of a stringy meat, isn't it?
It can be. You know, the unique thing about an alligator, there's 6 or 7 different kinds of meat on the critter, depending on what part you get it from. Some taste like chicken. Some can be a little fishy. Now, I'm not an expert on all those different parts. Typically, what I usually end up with is just a tail. And tail, I know, can be pretty tough, which is why we adapted to using that papaya for it. And, of course, it is a protected species in the state of Texas, so don't go out and wrangle one up yourself without all the licensing. You'll get in a lot of trouble with the local game wardens. But, I mean, you can buy it at Walmart. You can buy it at Fiesta. They've already gone out and got it for you and cleaned it and put it in a bag. It's usually in the frozen seafood section.
Now, do you feature any of these techniques in your interactive classes there at the George Ranch? Do you teach this to people?
We do the Dutch oven technique. We have several evening cooking classes that we offer throughout the year. And, of course, on any given day, if you wander around the park and the staff happen to have a fire going, they may be doing some cornbread in a Dutch oven. So there's a good chance on any given day you will see somebody somewhere in the park cooking with a Dutch oven or a crossbar and an S-hook set up over an open fire.
Do people come back and tell you how they've fared trying these techniques?
Yeah, you know, we have people come out and they'll eat our food and then they'll go home and then the next time they come out and say, you know, we tried what you told us to and it didn't work out just quite as good as what y'all were doing. And, you know, you have to remember I've been doing this since I was 12 and I'm 50-something now. So, you know, got a few years under the belt. But once you get the technique down, it's just like riding a bike, man. It's like kind of one of those muscle memory things, you know, and the best way to learn is to burn.
Wow.
You know, once you spend 3 hours chiseling out a bunch of burned sugar in the bottom of your cast iron, I guarantee you the next time you get that fire going, you might be a little bit more cautious as to how much heat you put underneath it.
Wow. Nick, again, the time has gotten away from me. I wanted to ask you about Fandangos and historic Saturday lunches and field trips and all of that, and we've just run out of time. Tell people where the George Ranch is located, your hours of operation, and how people can get in contact with you.
Well, we're out here in Richmond, Texas. You come down 59 South to the Crab River Road or Highway 99 exit. Take a left going south like you're heading towards Brazos Bend State Park. We're about 5 miles down on the right. We're open Tuesday through Saturday, 9 to 5. And the Saturday meals, we do recommend that you call and make a reservation. Those are every Saturday from 12:30 to 1:30. We do have a lot of school field trips come out. A lot of group tours come out as well. So if you're interested in a group tour or us bringing a school group out, all you need to do is call the visitor center.
This has been the highly knowledgeable and engaging personality of Nick Castleberg, who's the executive chef and senior raconteur at George Ranch Historical Park. Thanks for carving out a few minutes of your busy day with us, Nick. We hope you'll come back real soon.
Absolutely, Randy. Look forward to it, my friend. You take care of yourself.
Life is short. Grill while you can. Randy will be back with more food and fun after this break.
Boyd's One Stop. The name says it all. If you like seafood, you'll love Boyd's, conveniently located at the base of the Texas City Dike. Boyd's One Stop has bait, tackle, fresh seafood, and even a restaurant, all at 227 Dike Road. If you fish Galveston Bay, Boyd's is the one and only stop for everything you need. There's a reason why they're called the live shrimp capital of Texas. But they've also got lots of finger mullet, croaker, plus fresh dead shrimp, shad, and squid. Plus, Boyd's has tackle galore, ice and ice chests, and cold drinks and snacks. Just need fresh fish for a family seafood feast? The freshest seafood, like table shrimp, live blue crab, and crawfish when in season, is in stock and ready for you at Boyd's. And if you're hungry right now, check out Boyd's Cajun Grill Express right next door, with a wide variety of breakfast, lunch, and dinner items like crawfish, oyster po' boys, and fried seafood platters. Boyd's One Stop, the name says it all. 227 Dyke Road at the base of the Texas City Dyke.
If you're in the energy industry and want to drive down costs, it's time to automate. NuStar Energy Services provides automation solutions for pipelines, independent producers, and any company in the exploration and production sector. Still sending someone out in a pickup to read the flow computer on your well? For about $1 a day, NuStar can collect all the data remotely so you can monitor everything on a customized web portal. Heck, you can't even buy a gallon of gas for a truck for $1. How about the levels on your tanks at the well site? For about $1 a day, NuStar can set up remote monitoring so you can see the level in real time and even turn pumps on or off remotely. And remember, NuStar's remote monitoring packages start at about $1 a day. So call NuStar Energy Services today and improve your bottom line. 832-917-1200. That's 832-917-1200. Or NuStarInc.com.
Nothing beats farm fresh produce. Roadside stands are great, but not always well stocked. But Froberg's Farm on Highway 6 in Alvin always has produce fresh from the field. You can't get produce this fresh in stores. Froberg's has a spacious covered market, or you can pick your own produce if you prefer. This time of year is great for cabbage, cauliflower, collard and mustard greens, turnips, radishes, rutabagas, kumquats, even Brussels sprouts, and a whole lot more. Fruits, vegetables, jams, jellies, pickles, and a huge selection of dried beans and peas. And Froberg's Farm is famous for its pies, both traditional homemade or fried pies, with over 20 different flavors. Order in advance, and Froberg's can have as many as you need ready for pickup. And be sure you visit Greek Smokehouse right next door while you're there. Froberg's Farm, only 8 miles south of 288 and 2.5 miles from Business 35 on Highway 6 in Alvin. Open 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Froberg's Farm. Farm fresh produce since 1936.
Does the cell phone connectivity in your office stink? Do you routinely miss calls? Lots of buildings have dead zones, and that means garbled or dropped calls. But not anymore. Texas Cell Phone Boosters provides FCC-approved cell phone booster systems that can make dead zones a thing of the past. These are not rinky-dink systems from big box stores. These are commercial-grade booster systems that cover tens of thousands of square feet. And Texas Cell Phone Boosters will specifically engineer and install a system in your office or warehouse. If you drive or regularly work in remote locations, Texas Cell Phone Boosters can help you boost a weak signal from a tower a long way off. So don't miss calls from potential customers any longer. Call the pros at Texas Cell Phone Boosters, 832-551-1000. That's 832-551-1000. Or go to texascellphoneboosters.com.
May the forks be with you. The Outdoor Cooking Show is brought to you by Froberg's Farm on Highway 6 in Alvin. Now, here's the man who turns all the grills on, Randy Haynes.
We are literally proud to host Chris Wilson, the culinary director at Emeril's Home Base. Welcome, Chris.
Good morning.
Nice. Obviously, Emeril's Home Base refers to Emeril Lagasse. But tell us what Emeril's Home Base does.
Well, this is our corporate office, so to speak. It's our support system for all the restaurants, really, from accounting and technology and legal and culinary support.
And what are your responsibilities as the culinary director?
I see my responsibility as, it's the job of a chef is tough. And, there's a lot of different nuances. And so I think of my responsibility mainly as removing hurdles from the daily operation of a chef and just helping them to do their job effectively.
So what's your formal training in the culinary arts?
I graduated from the Culinary Institute of America up in Hyde Park, New York.
And where have you worked over the years?
I've been in New Orleans working with Emeril for over 24 years now.
Wow. Where were you before that?
I did a brief stint in Dallas, Texas, and then I worked briefly in New York City.
So how did you come to be associated with Emeril Lagasse?
Right when I graduated from culinary school, Emeril was just getting his start, and every publication you read and every computer you got on was Emeril this and Emeril that, and you know, he was extremely hot at the time, and I was in New York City, not in a great place, and I just jumped on Amtrak and came down to work for Emeril.
Wow, just like that, huh?
Just like that.
Well, today we are talking about unique techniques. The subject came up of Robata-style grilling, and we understand you know quite a bit about that. Give us some background on Robata.
What real Robata cooking is, it's a Japanese cooking method of extremely high heat charcoal cooking.
Huh.
So it's a amped up grilling, so to speak.
And we did a little research on Robata. We found out that it actually predates sushi in Japan. I didn't know that.
It is an extremely old technique.
And it actually began as a part of the Japanese tea ceremony.
It did.
With a pit dug out in the center of a Japanese home where a pot's hanging from a chain in the ceiling. Is that right?
That is absolutely correct.
And then the tea became cooking, and Robata was born. Now, we also have come to understand that Robata was especially effective for Japanese fishermen.
Correct.
Who wanted hot meals on board wooden fishing vessels. How would that work?
Very carefully, for starters. but the most important part about the Robata is I believe, the charcoal that you use and the level of heat.
But would the fishermen raise the grill up off the deck of the ship to avoid contact with wood or something like that?
They often raised it, or sometimes they would build some sort of galvanized lining, like a sheet metal wrap around the wood. But more often than not, they raised it so it didn't have contact with that wood.
So is Robata a widespread technique in the United States, or is it just getting started?
Honestly, I think it's pretty new in the United States. I haven't seen a lot of it. We've come to do it a little bit just through research, and it's a technique that we believe in.
Speaking in terms of the United States, is Robata exclusively used in American Japanese restaurants, or can it be found in other eateries too?
No, I don't think it's exclusive. You know, for instance, our newest restaurant, Merrill, we do what we call Robata grilling, which may not be actual Robata cooking. But what we did is we took that technology, that idea of the technique of Robata cooking, and we went to Texas and custom built a grill that we could use for that technique.
And we've also heard that Robata style of cooking uses a very special kind of charcoal. It's different from the charcoal we buy in the stores. Explain that for us.
It does. Well, the certain natural charcoal that burns at a much higher heat, and it provides a much cleaner flavor.
How do you actually prepare the fire for Robata cooking? We've heard something about foil. Is that correct?
Well, what we do is our fire never actually gets cold enough to go out.
Huh.
Because it stays so hot throughout the day and evening that if you just stop feeding it at night, when you come back in the morning, you throw some charcoals on and it just relights.
Wow. Now, when we're cooking on a stovetop, maybe even using a traditional outdoor grill, which is what the Outdoor Cooking Show is all about, we can regulate the flame. But if we understand it correctly, in Robata, you control the heat by adjusting the proximity of the food to the flame. Is that right?
That is correct. And also, the one that we built, we have air chambers where we can increase or decrease the air. So increasing the air into the fire makes it hotter, and decreasing it makes it cooler.
So how do you adjust the proximity of the food to the flame?
Well, we have actually four compartments on our grill that we can move around towards the edge of the fire or towards the center, and just increase the heat by dropping a little bit and decrease the heat by raising it a little bit.
And that's the reason for the chain hanging from the ceiling, I guess.
Exactly.
Now, we've all been to that popular Japanese restaurant chain, which has nothing to do with the chain in the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where the food's cooked right in front of you and all of that. That's not Robata style, right?
That is not Robata. It's a lot of fun. It's just not Robata.
What's the advantage of Robata over that style of cooking that we'd find in that well-known Japanese chain restaurant?
Well, like I said, when you're burning that clean, solid fuel, a good quality charcoal, you get a much cleaner flavor. But the intensity of the heat, we use a lot of thinner cuts of meat, vegetables that are already marinated. So it's a quick grilling process. It seals in flavor, and it cooks very rapidly.
Okay, let's talk about specific dishes now, Chris. Sure. What are the most popular entrees that are prepared Rabada style?
We've got a few. One would be a Korean-style short rib.
Ooh.
And then we do a house-made kimchi with that. I like a lot of vegetables on the grill. Zucchini is a great one that we marinate with lemon zest and olive oil and garlic. We do also some candied pork ribs. And we do even a lot of fish preparations on the grill.
Now, Chris, you mentioned kimchi. I was actually stationed in Korea for 13 months, about 150 years ago. tell me, what is kimchi and how do you prepare it?
Kimchi can be any various preparations. Most traditionally, they use cabbage. But in Japan, it's actually fermented with chili powder and rice vinegar and fish sauce often. But it's a fermented vegetable product. Here in the United States, we just tend to make it more of a marinade. We do cucumbers and bok choy, and we marinate in this chili powder and rice vinegar with a touch of fish sauce. But classically, it was buried in a clay pot and fermented.
And getting back to the Rabada style of cooking, is fish too delicate and flaky to do Rabada style?
Not at all.
How would you adjust the heat to allow for a fish dish?
Well, you don't want a high heat for fish. You want more medium to where you can sear the fish. You can cook it rapidly without drying it out.
And one of the other things we couldn't help but note was that one Rabada expert said, if you see leaping flames in a Rabada restaurant, they're doing it wrong. Is that accurate?
I believe it is. What you want to cook is with hot coals as opposed to flame.
And how do you achieve that?
By not burning too much of the solid fuel, but B, by not giving it too much air.
And what's the optimal way in which Rabada should work? If leaping flames is wrong, what's right?
A bright glowing coal.
And you get that by burning it down, kind of like we do charcoal in an outdoor grill in our backyard?
You let it burn, and you will have flames, but you want to wait till those flames dissipate. So you don't want to get that char flavor of a flame. When the flame hits your food, it creates this sort of gassy flavor to it, which you want to avoid.
And we briefly alluded to sushi at the beginning of our conversation, and that's what most of us think of when we start talking about Japanese cuisine. Does sushi augment Rabada-prepared meats and vegetables, or do they stand better alone?
I think it's just two very different preparations, and I like the simplicity and the beauty of each one separate.
So maybe a sushi appetizer and a Rabada entree, something like that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's perfect.
Chris Wilson, Rabada-style cooking expert and also the culinary director of Emerald's Home Base. How can people learn more about Emerald's Home Base? Website, social media, that kind of thing.
Website is www.emeraldsrestaurants.com. And also for the Emerald Agassi Foundation, our charitable division, it's Emerald.org.
Chris, it's been a pleasure having you on the Outdoor Cooking Show. It's been very revealing, Rabada-style cooking. Thanks for your time. And we want you to come back and visit with us about crawfish boils soon. Can you do that?
My pleasure. I would love to.
We hope you've enjoyed this edition of the Outdoor Cooking Show. Send us your burning questions and favorite recipes in a private message on our Facebook page, The Outdoor Cooking Show. Or visit our website, theoutdoorcookingshow.com. Join us next week for more tasty food and fun over a red-hot grill on The Outdoor Cooking Show.
How's about cooking something else?